Ecology, a Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment.
When we legalized marijuana, we definitely saw an increase in emergency department visits and hospitalizations. It was a fairly large increase in the first 6 months of 2014.
Research published this week in the New England Journal of Medicine shows this increase is happening in large part among out-of-state visitors. Public health officials and authors of the study say these results highlight the need for education for consumers that details safe use of marijuana products where it's sold. Mike Van Dyke says there are several factors contributing to the increase.
You know, one factor is that people come into Colorado on vacation. They have that vacation mentality. Another factor is that emergency department visits among out-of-state residents aren't nearly as high as those among in-state residents.
Powered by WesternJournalism.com, I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
Is that low?
Well, Staples has everyday low prices on the office items you use most.
How do you know what my office uses most?
We have low prices on pens, coffee, pencils, tech products, ink, and paper.
You do know what we use most. You're like a psychic.
Well, that's just what I see in your cart.
Oh, right.
Go to Staples for everyday low prices, plus special deals for even more.
Carolina Courtroom, USA's Tammy Rose reports.
Albert Taylor is accused of shooting a 17-year-old at a South Carolina bowling alley. Jamari Fair, Dennis Gibbs, and a 15-year-old are also facing murder charges, but none of that seemed to faze them.
What are these cameras for?
It's the news media.
Nah, I got a question.
Oh, the news media? What's up? Y'all know you following me on Twitter.
Following me on Instagram, Luca Bassett Jr. Snapchat.
The victim's great-grandfather shook his head as he listened to the outrageous outburst in court.
We talked to his mother just the other day, and she just get in the house and get in his room all straightened out, and then just 3 or 4 days later, this happened.
I'm Tammy Rose.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
How big is Rite Aid's Big Point event? Plenty big. The more participating products you buy with Wellness Plus with Plenty, the more Plenty points you earn through February 27th. Earn 2,000 points when you spend $100, another 1,500 when you get to $150, and yet another 1,500 at $200. That's up to 5,000 Plenty points worth at least $50 in savings, only at Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Earning based on total purchases from 131 to 227.16. Limit 5,000 Plenty points per card. Plenty is a rewards program. Terms and conditions apply. See plenty.com/terms for details.
A diabetes drug could help lower the risk of recurring strokes and heart attacks. A trial done at Yale University finds that the drug sold as Actos decreased the number of cardiovascular incidents by nearly a quarter through a 5-year span. A different study done in 2006 found the drug reduced risk for heart attacks and strokes, but not for those who had experienced one previously. People who undergo heart surgery or suffer a cardiac event are typically prescribed a cardiac rehabilitation program as part of their recovery process. Dr. Leslie Cho with the Cleveland Clinic says cardiac rehab is one of the best things the heart patients can do to improve their odds of survival, as well as their quality of life.
We have designed an exercise program. You exercise in a hospital with an exercise physiologist, with nurses and doctors, and we gradually build up your exercise capacity.
Cardiac rehab is a 12-week program that's suited to each person's functional capacity. Patients will typically exercise 3 days per week for about an hour each day, in addition to meeting with a nutritionist. And most cardiac rehab is paid for by insurance after you've had a heart event or a surgery. Dr. Cho says multiple studies have shown that folks who do cardiac rehab actually live longer, have fewer heart attacks, and less need for repeat hospitalization. And she urges people who don't think it's worth their time to give cardiac rehab a try.
It's really crucial because it's not just about exercise. It's about learning how to eat, learning to stop smoking, controlling your stress factors. It's really a crucial part of having a healthy life after your heart event.
I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
USA Radio News with Melody Burkett.
And the fact is that we have been good friends with Donald and his family for many years, and there was no choice in my mind.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is endorsing Donald Trump to be President of the United States.
There is no one who is better prepared to provide America with the strong leadership that it needs, both at home and around the world, than Donald Trump.
In a statement in Fort Worth, Texas, Christie said Trump is the candidate with the best shot at defeating Hillary Clinton. Christie gave a glowing endorsement of his former opponent for the nomination, saying he's a strong and resolute leader. It's a tough day for family members who lost loved ones in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. It was 23 years ago today. Terrorists drove a van containing a 1,200-pound bomb into the parking garage of the North Tower. The bomb killed six people, including a pregnant woman, and injured more than 1,000 others. This is USA Radio News.
GEICO applauds your inner happy camper.
A merit badge of awesomeness goes out to the part of you that wants to put the recreation in recreational vehicle. The part of you that packs up everything and everybody in the RV and says, let's get this show on the road. Because GEICO has specialized agents who help save money on more than just car insurance. GEICO will insure that entire RV, so you can get the s'more making, poison ivy dodging, same song singing, ghost storytelling, campfire building, best time you ever had with your family, show on the road.
GEICO for your RV. See how much you could save.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, is this the right price on paper?
Yes, it is.
That's low.
Well, Staples has everyday low prices on the office items you use most.
How do you know what my office uses most?
We have low prices on pens, coffee, pencils, tech products, ink, and paper.
You do know what we use most. You're like a psychic.
Well, that's just what I see in your cart.
Oh, right.
Go to Staples for everyday low prices, plus special deals for even more savings. Make everyday low prices happen. Make everything for your business happen. Staples, make more happen.
Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump is making fun of rival Marco Rubio. At a rally in Texas, Trump spilled some water from a water bottle.
It's Rubio! Unbelievable.
Trump often chides Rubio for sweating a lot. He also called Rubio a lightweight. The war of words between Trump and Rubio is getting more intense. At an earlier event, Senator Rubio called Trump a con artist. Rubio criticized Trump for misspelling words on Twitter. He suggested that Trump hire an illegal worker to write his tweets. The girlfriend of a man who killed three people in a Kansas shooting yesterday says he was prone to violence and needed help. Cedric Ford was shot and killed by police during his rampage, which wounded more than a dozen people in Heston. His living girlfriend asked for and was given a protection order in the weeks before the attack, claiming Ford was an alcoholic, violent, and depressed. Ford also had a long criminal history of drug charges, battery, and theft. Earlier in the month, Ford posted pictures of himself holding guns online. This is USA Radio News.
Any Jane Doe can tell you that GEICO could help you save, but since money talks, we just ask the savings instead.
Greetings and sun salutations. I'm Jane's Money, and I never knew my self-worth until Jane switched her car insurance at GEICO.com. Those 15 minutes built me up to real savings. GEICO's been helping customers save money like me for over 75 years. So take that to the bank. And namaste.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, February 26th. I hope a number of you are out there getting ready for the dinner dance tonight. That's at the Grand Colonial. And I know everyone has cleared out of the station. And I'm Pat Smits, and I'm going to talk to you about some law issues. Actually, I'm going to talk about Supreme Court Justice Scalia. But before that, let me tell you about this weather, because if you're planning something for the weekend, actually Sunday is going to be unbelievable. Tomorrow is going to be warm, clear tonight, sunny tomorrow, about 40 degrees. But by Sunday, it can get up to about 56 degrees, mostly sunny. And then in by Monday, partly sunny, then slight chance of showers. But this is going to be one of those weekends that you know, I guess we can all get outside and start cleaning up from some of the damage. And for those of you who suffered a lot of damage in this recent storm the other night, I guess it will give you an opportunity to get out there and clean it up. Hopefully it wasn't as bad as some of the damage that we incurred, many of us incurred after the hurricane when we had limbs going through our house. But in any event, don't think I've heard of many people or anybody who was hurt, although there was a huge gas explosion in Hopewell. So there might have been some people in Hopewell Borough who really were injured, or at least they were very frightened. So I'm going to bring you one spot from a sponsor, and then I'm going to be back. And I'd like to speak about Justice Anton Scalia, who, if you've not been under the covers for the last week and a half, you know that he has, in fact, passed away. And, of course, the other thing that is probably top of the news is that Governor Christie has now endorsed Donald Trump for the Republican nomination. So that'll be a very interesting situation. They were obviously on the opposite sides of one another. We know that Governor Christie has, in fact, suspended his campaign, and I guess that's a euphemism for quit the race. But we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
We're back. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. Those of you who know me know that I practice family law, and that is my, I guess, specialty, but also that's where I limit my practice. However, one of the issues, and I think that it is important to understand how important the Supreme Court is, and for that reason, we did lose a tremendous jurist. Whether we agreed with Justice Anton Scalia or not, he was brilliant. He served on the court longer than any of the other justices, and now we have a vacancy on the Supreme Court. And unfortunately, it's becoming a political football, as everything seems to be, because under our Constitution, the president of the United States, whether you like him or not, it's Barack Obama, and he has not only the authority to appoint a Supreme Court justice, but he has a responsibility to nominate a Supreme Court justice. And of course, the legislators, the Senate has the right to advise and consent. Now, there's a lot of controversy over whether or not President Obama should nominate anyone at this time, because he is what we call a lame duck president. But sit back and think about this. For our highest court of the land, this means that they will only have 8 justices. I know apparently Justice Alito made some comment that they can work with 8 justices. However, it really creates problems from a standpoint if there are close votes and there's only a vote, a 4-4 vote. It means that whatever the appellate court did stands. It also creates other problems. So, and one of the problems that I see, and I suppose that one of my concerns, is that here in New Jersey, we have so many vacancies, so many judicial vacancies, that the courts in many areas are almost grinding to a halt. We're asking our judges to do yeoman work with not enough resources, and it backs everything up. It makes everything more expensive. It delays and delays and delays. That won't be the same situation with the Supreme Court. However, let's think about it. We don't have an election until November. We certainly won't have a justice, anyone appointed for at least the next year. By the way these things go, there would have to be a nomination. They'd have to be approved. There's going to be bickering. And so we're going to be without a Supreme Court justice. And I'll take a wager on it. Unless President Obama is able to nominate and have a Supreme Court justice approved, we won't have anyone sitting on the court for the next year. And it'll probably be even longer than that because it will take Congress that long to approve anyone who is appointed. And, you know, it's very interesting because the question now is that the nominee that President Obama puts forth will probably be fairly conservative because he's going to try to get the Republicans to approve. What really bothers me is that there have been too many Republicans who've come out and said they don't care who it is, they won't approve of anyone. And that's what is really from a legal standpoint and from a constitutional standpoint and from a standpoint of what they are elected to do is very troublesome to me, and I think it should be troublesome to everyone. If they don't feel that the candidate that President Obama nominates, fine, then vote him down. But give any candidate the opportunity to, in fact, be nominated and have a vote, a or nay. And, of course, we also have to recognize that if someone is qualified, they're supposed to get not only nominated, but, in fact, approved. So, anyway, those of you who know me know that Justice Anton Scalia, from a judicial perspective, was not my favorite. He was a very, very strict constitutionalist. He felt that the Constitution could not grow and that we should be basically deciding things now as when the Constitution was enacted. But I'm going to read something today because I've read it and I think it's, I thought it was very interesting. And this was I'm trying to think of where it was published. I will certainly find that or try to. And this was written by Tara Cole. And, of course, if you know anything about the court, you know that Anton Scalia died on Saturday, February 13th. And there are many people who have commented on his legacy in the court. Those of us who know or knew him, one of the people that I heard speak about him was Peter Venero. Peter was a former Supreme Court justice here in New Jersey. He spoke eloquently about Justice Scalia. Justice Scalia was born in Trenton, New Jersey. He was the first Italian American on the court. I'm not sure if he was the first Catholic, but he may have been. I guess he must have been. He had 9 children, and he survived by his wife, and I believe all 9 children. But what I want to read is something that was written by one of his clerks, and this clerk was liberal. Justice Scalia had the reputation of hiring one law clerk who was liberal, and everybody who knew him, of course, knew he was, you know, the most conservative justice on the court. But this is written by Tara Cole, and she's now a partner in a law firm and a lecturer at the University of Southern California School of Law. So, as we know, the influential and most provocative member of the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia, died at the age of 79. And this is what Ms. Cole says about him. When I was in law school, a Supreme Court clerkship was a holy grail. For me, it was clerking for Justice Anton Scalia. Now that I'm a partner in a law firm that serves the notoriously progressive entertainment industry, the fact that I once clerked for Scalia often elicits looks of surprise from those sitting across from me who ask if I am the functional equivalent of a unicorn, a conservative in Los Angeles. a place that Scalia had amusingly warned me would, quote, melt my brain, end quote. I tell them no, I'm politically liberal, but that my time working for the justice was one of the defining experiences of my life. Now, this is again Ms. Cole. I had heard all through law school that Scalia always hired one liberal clerk, though my sense is that this practice had waned in recent years. In fact, the process of applying for a Supreme Court clerkship entails applying to all 9 justices, the notion being that justices choose clerks and not the other way around. But Justice Scalia was a person for whom I most wanted to work. Not because we were ideologically aligned, but because we were not. I had to do with the way he was so deeply vilified, both personally and as a jurist, by so many of my classmates. And this is aside from me, and this is true. I went to Rutgers Law School, and in fact, Justice Scalia was vilified, and often the problem is nobody could contest him from a standpoint of his huge intellect, but as far as his decisions, they were often poked at by anybody who was right of Attila the Hun. But going back to what she said, Ms. Cole said, we discussed in almost cartoonish fashion, conjuring images of twirled mustaches and barely concealed devil horns. And she said that actually he was discussed, meaning Justice Scalia was discussed in almost cartoonish fashion, conjuring images of twirled mustaches and barely concealed devil horns. It was a time just after Bush v. Gore and 9/11, when battle lines had been drawn and it was politically correct to reject wholesale any belief that was not your own. That approach made me uncomfortable, and I found myself becoming more and more interested in Justice Scalia's work, eager to understand how someone so clearly brilliant could see the world so differently than I did. It's why I took the job. And in some ways, the job is a strange one. To assist in writing of opinions, clerks have to get inside a justice's mind to think as they do and to write as they would. My role was to facilitate his, and sometimes that was easier than others. In one case I worked on, writing a dissent, and of course, as we know, or as lawyers know, a dissent means that it's a position held by a minority of the court. And she said, with which I fundamentally disagreed on a moral level, but found as I wrote that I was drawn to Scalia's reasoning, his emphasis on precedent, strict textual construction, and judicial restraint. While I remain bound not to discuss details of cases I worked on, I can say that Scalia's arguments in that case conveyed a clarity not found in the majority's opinion, which relied on legal and verbal gymnastics in order to reach the desired outcome. His approach had a logic and simplicity that resonated with me despite my politics. I found myself able to get inside his mind in that moment, to sublimate my own views and write confidently in his voice. I was proud when my co-clerk told me that Scalia had called it a, quote, knockout, end quote. There were other days, though, that I found myself sitting on Scalia's worn leather couch looking at Leroy, the mounted elk's head that dominated the justice's chambers, wondering how both Leroy and I had gotten there, as Scalia and my 3 conservative co-clerks all found common ground that I simply could not access. You really think that? And that can't be right, were refrains I often heard in response to bench memos I prepared in advance of oral argument. I'll admit that I went back and forth between playing the part of a contrarian and simply trying to give the justice the recommendations he was looking for. There were times I was pleased when he noted my penchant for disagreement. Once, when my co-clerks gave him a draft of an important opinion, Scalia nodded toward me, smiled, and said, quote, "Let's give it to Milky," quoting Old Life cereal commercial. Quote, "She doesn't like anything," end quote. In those moments, I felt I had license to challenge Justice Scalia, and my arguments were always met with energetic debate and his eagerness to prove me wrong. At other times, I simply wanted his approval and for him to tell me that I was finally thinking right, which he meant with its full double entendre. I missed the mark a few times when I made assumptions about what Justice Scalia would think based on his political leanings. In one particular criminal case, I tried to anticipate his reaction and gave him the analysis I thought he wanted. But when I suggested he might want to follow the more conventionally conservative line of thinking, he looked at me incredulously and said, quote, "We can't do that." There was another case where we were tasked with writing the majority opinion. When I saw him struggle and ultimately change his mind after realizing that the text of the statute would not support the position he initially wanted to take, that was the one time the justice, who was very respectful of personal time and valued his own, called me on a weekend and asked me to come into chambers. As we worked through the case together, the power went out in our wing of the court. Rather than taking a break, we moved our chairs and books into the hallway using natural light that came through the courtyard. This prompted Justice David Souter, who was famously adverse to using modern technology, including, seemingly, the light bulb, to poke fun at our inability to read in dim light. If there was a true surprise during my year clerking for Scalia, it was how little reference he made to political outcomes. What he cared about was the law and where the words on the page took him. More than any one opinion, this will be his lasting contribution to legal thought. Whatever our beliefs, he forced lawyers and scholars to engage on his terms: textual analysis and original meaning. He forced us all to acknowledge that words cannot mean anything we want them to mean, that we have to impose a degree of discipline on our thinking, a discipline I value to this day. Justice Scalia treated me with enormous respect and always seemed to value my opinion, a heady experience for someone just 1 year out of law school. I never felt as though he looked at me differently than my conservative counterparts. His trust felt implicit, which is perhaps why I struggled so much between wanting to challenge him and wanting to please. He was also, hands down, the smartest person I've ever known. What would take me weeks to understand would take him minutes to process. I'll never forget my first experience handing him an opinion and watching him, in a matter of minutes, type a few lines into his typewriter. Yes, a typewriter even in 2004, and instantly cut to the heart of the issue in a way that I'd simply been unable to do. When I read his new draft, I realized that I tried too hard to bridge the difference between his opinion and that of another justice in order to hold our majority. His changes strengthened the argument, but also I feared risk putting us in the dissent. But Justice Scalia didn't compromise his principles, even on the smallest issues. He knew his own mind and taught me the importance of knowing my own. Well, this, to me, was very touching, probably one of the most eloquent things I have read about Justice Scalia, because it was, in fact, from someone who did not share his political conservative beliefs, but did work with him and had the respect of the justice, which I don't think there's anyone who would say that they didn't respect his intellect and respect his principles, and whether they agreed or not, felt that he was a tremendous, made tremendous contributions to the court. And of course, one of the other things that I learned is that Justice Scalia and Justice Ginsburg were very friendly. Justice Ginsburg, of course, is certainly not conservative, and they even went to the opera together. So he leaves behind a great legacy, however, that is not any basis for not replacing him during President Obama's tenure. And once again, it's going to make everything look not only political, but the fact that the politicians in Washington cannot agree on anything. And we may be still talking about this. Well, I'm sure if we don't get a nomination approved before President Obama leaves office, it will certainly be probably the summer of 2017 before we're talking about an appointment. And then, of course, the court goes on recess. So we could actually be September of 2017 before we have a new Supreme Justice. So I'll be right back with other legal news after a few messages from our sponsors. Please stay tuned.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325. You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
We're back. I'm Pat Smith's program, It's the Law, Friday the 26th of February. Can't believe the last Friday. And, of course, for all of you who have a birthday on Monday, including my grandson, of course, you are now maybe celebrating your third birthday if you're 12, or your second birthday if you're 8. So that's always been a fun thing to talk about. So anyway, happy birthday, Tommy, on Monday, and happy fifth birthday. So we heard on the news earlier that Governor Christie is now supporting Donald Trump. Interesting. Very interesting in light of some of the other candidates who would certainly have liked his support. We'll see whether this does much of anything to push Donald even farther in front. But in any event, maybe Governor Christie's trying to, in one sense, cover up some of the stuff that's going on in New Jersey. And one of the things that is really, really discouraging, and we see this in New Jersey time after time after time, but apparently invoices that were recently released by the state for work performed in connection with the Bridgegate scandal, remember that, closing of the entrances and exits from the George Washington Bridge, they're just mounting the legal bills that have been accumulated, and it's not even a New Jersey law firm. It's a New York firm, Gibson, Dunn, and Crutchker. Apparently, the e-discovery bill is $2.28 million. And this is really scandalous, folks. I mean, we can't fund our state pension system, and yet we're getting, this type of thing. It's going to exceed $5 million before we're done. In any event, there was another case, that a first impression, and a federal judge in Camden has ruled that a hospice care company is subject to suit under the False Claims Act, and that was for charging or changing patients' diagnoses to make them eligible for reimbursement under Medicare. So, you know, here we go. That will, of course, play out in the courts, but in fact, they are going to be subject to lawsuit because of that. Now, Johnson & Johnson, Johnson & Johnson subsidiary, asked the New Jersey Appeals Court this week to overturn an $11.1 million verdict awarded in the first bellwether trial over allegedly harmful pelvic mesh implants. So that's a huge verdict against them, and that will go up on appeal, not surprisingly, and we'll be hearing more about that case in the future. Now, a case where a client sought to recoup $800,000 in attorney's fees that were already paid, and the firm sought to collect more than $1 million in fees, still due and owing. Apparently, an $81,000 judgment against the firm, nobody's going to be happy over that one. But that was the decision. So everybody's a loser on that one. So what other news is happening? Well, our Attorney General, our Acting Attorney General, John Hoffman, is going to leave his post in March to become a Senior Vice President and General Counsel at Rutgers. And speculation has begun over, you know, who's going to take over and be his successor, or whether Governor Christie will make a formal nomination. In other words, Attorney General was only the Acting Attorney General. And in more mundane things, or maybe not, the Mercedes is accused of diesel fuel, the fraud that's similar to the VW scandal. And that was a class action filed in federal court in Newark, said that Mercedes-Benz clean diesel models are programmed to shut off pollution controls under certain circumstances. Now, you know, we don't have a lot of information on that, but that was, of course, similar to the allegations made by Volkswagen that prompted hundreds of lawsuits. And one of the things, and it really distresses me when I hear about some of the class action suits, and my guests last week, if you were listening, they were talking about the fact that in New Jersey, they would like to see some reforms so that some of these things are brought not in the courts, not by lawsuits, because innocent companies just are driven to the verge of bankruptcy because of the legal fees in these class action suits. And some of them are really, really minutiae. Now there's some controversy, actually not controversy, discussions about alternate dispute resolution venues becoming more popular and commonly used methods to dissolve, or I should say resolve divorce and post-divorce issues, including mediation and arbitration, collaborative law. And these are really very, very good ways of people handling their cases. However, the courts need to have sufficient number of judges so that the people who don't feel that they can resolve their cases do not have to come back over and over and over. This is certainly true in the family area, where they just have to come and sit day after day sometimes on what we call intensive settlement conferences, so the judges can try to do what they need to do to get these cases settled. And it is true, most cases should settle, but there are those that won't, and there are others that just are going to take longer, and the legal fees just escalate all out of proportion. So there was a case in family law that was, in fact, published, and it's Fitcher versus Fitcher, Judge Jones. And again, he's a trial court judge, and I've always, he does write a number of opinions. A number of his opinions have been published, and this is excellent because it gives guidance to the lawyers. Unpublished opinions, we can read them, but we can't use them in the same way because they're not precedent. So in this case, we know that in 2013, New Jersey amended the child support guidelines to include additional provisions related to the cost of motor vehicle insurance. Now, these amendments have arguably raised further debate and question as to whether a parent who is already paying guideline-level child support is or is not obligated to also continue to contribute to the additional cost of an unemancipated teenage child's car insurance as a newly licensed driver. Now, anybody who's had teenagers know that once you put them on the insurance, it usually really escalates the insurance. So the question is, does the non-custodial parent, should they share in that cost? Because it is the custodial parent or the parent where the or whom the child lives with most of the time that has to add the child on their insurance. And they have to do it whether or not the child is driving the car, unless the child has his or her own car. Well, there really is no case law addressing this issue subsequent to the 2013 amendments. And so Judge Jones addressed the issue in the case before him. And for the reasons set forth in his opinion, the court in this case held that the parents made the following decisions. Reasonable car insurance is one of the most important expenditures which two responsible parents may make for the protection of a newly licensed teenage driver. Second, for an unemancipated child under the age of 18 years of age, the child support guidelines generally cover child support, including, at the very least, technical consideration of the general cost of insurance as part of a family budget. Now, a court, Judge Jones held that a court in its reasonable discretion, however, may increase or otherwise adjust guideline-level child support in a particular case to account for the very critical, specialized, and unique nature of car insurance. And so that based on multiple considerations, including the need for both parents to financially contribute and in furtherance of the child's best interest. So for an unemancipated child over 18 years of age, the court in its discretion may generally determine child support under the statute without the guidelines and may direct parents to contribute some or all of the cost of reasonable car insurance as well based on factual circumstances of the case. So that this is going to be the cost of insurance for an unemancipated child is generally covered by child support, according to Judge Jones. There is another case that was quite important in the family law area, and in that case, the appellate division clarified the application of the 2014 amendments to the alimony statute, and they addressed the modification of alimony when the payor, the person paying alimony, retires, and that's all, he or she is often called the obligor. And they held that when an obligor files an application to terminate or modify alimony upon retirement, the circumstances of the parties are examined under the statute. And more specifically, subsection J1, which places the burden on the obligee, the person receiving the alimony, to rebut the presumption to terminate alimony when the obligor reaches full retirement age as defined in the statute. Now, that is in effect for alimony awards after the effective date of the statute, 2014. The appellate division said, however, that another subsection of the statute that requires the person paying alimony to demonstrate by a preponderance of the evidence modification or termination is appropriate. And that provision governs the final alimony awards established prior to the effective date of the statutory amendment. So, in other words, depending if you were divorced after the amendment to the statute or before, it is important because it determines who has the burden under those circumstances. So that is clarified that, and that's an appellate division case, so the judges are going to follow that. And so if it's more recent, they use one section of the law. If it's an older case, they will enforce and require the person paying alimony to come in and prove that he or she should not have to pay any alimony in the future. Now, there was another case, but then the case had to do with, I was trying to find the actual case itself. The issue was whether or not a New Jersey child welfare caseworker who took a child from its mother during an investigation, whether or not these caseworkers have qualified immunity from a due process suit because they had no notice established by case law that they were violating a clearly established constitutional right. So the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit has ruled that, in fact, they do have qualified immunity. And, in fact, they should be immune because these are usually it's DCP&P. They're going in after being told there's emergencies. They have to act very quickly and do what they think is in the best interest of the children. And so this would put them under a dark cloud that they could get sued if for some reason anyone questioned their judgment. So we also know that the prosecutor in Somerset County is being replaced, and I know that Bill Wolfson has walked in. I'm not sure. Bill, do you know who the new prosecutor, or do we just know that, in fact, the prosecutor in Somerset is being replaced?
All I know is that he's being replaced, Pat, and good afternoon, everybody. It's not quite 5 o'clock, but I showed up early because I know, Pat, you've got big doings tonight. Is that right?
Yes, I'm going to the dinner dance, and hopefully other people are. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Bill in just a couple minutes. But Bill, since you're here early, anything on the legal front? Have you heard that our governor is now supporting Donald Trump?
Well, that's no surprise, considering that they like to say that they're each other's friend. Who knows where this is going? I am staying out of politics. They say that there's three things you really shouldn't discuss in polite company. politics, religion, and things involving reproduction. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Well, actually, the other thing is there, and I don't see any recent bankruptcy cases, and I know Bill, for those of you who don't know him, Bill is a bankruptcy attorney, an excellent bankruptcy attorney, and he's my go-to person whenever I have any bankruptcy questions. But I haven't seen any new cases, anything significant coming out of the bankruptcy courts or the statutes, Bill?
Well, there is. As you may know, the Chapter 13 jurisdictional limits are set to go up again on April 1, April Fool's Day of 2016. Code section Code section 109 puts an upward limitation on Chapter 13 bankruptcy cases, and it has to be reviewed every 3 years according to the bankruptcy code. So between the IRS and the Executive Office of the United States Bankruptcy Trustee and the Census Bureau, the agencies that are there to help keep track of statistical things that are important to government, the economy, and to the public. Every 3 years, they take a look at the bankruptcy code, and they decide whether the jurisdictional limits for being able to file a Chapter 13.
Why don't you explain that? In other words, what do you mean? Are you saying that for our listeners who wouldn't be aware, and I think most people are not aware, that in fact, what do you mean by jurisdictional limits on filing a Chapter 13?
Well, presently the jurisdictional limits are if you owe secured debt, meaning debt backed by collateral like a house or a car or perhaps an office building where you've given a guarantee, if you owe more than $1,149,183, you can't file a Chapter 13. You have to file a Chapter 11. If you have unsecured debt, such as credit cards or bills to your doctor, hopefully not your lawyer, of more than $383,183, you're also precluded from filing a Chapter 13. So if you're above one of those limits, you've got to file a Chapter 11. Now, what's a Chapter 13?
Yeah, that was my next question. So explain what a Chapter 13 is, because I think that most people, when they think of bankruptcy, they just are really thinking about a Chapter 7 where they're going to file for bankruptcy and get out of all their debts.
Well, a Chapter 13 lets you do some interesting things. It lets you keep your house and get caught up on your mortgage, get caught up if you owe taxes or other debts. And because you can only go 5 years, because Congress doesn't want people to be essentially indentured servants to their creditors, there's a 5-year limitation on how long a Chapter 13 plan can go for monthly payments. Generally, when we file a Chapter 13 for somebody, it's because they're behind in a mortgage, they're facing foreclosure. But we also have something else very valuable we can do in a Chapter 13. If you have a second mortgage or a third mortgage or judgments against you, and your house is worth less than you owe on your first mortgage, we can do something called lien stripping or cramming down. What does that mean in English? That means that if you complete a Chapter 13 plan, you might not have to pay your second mortgage or your third mortgage or the extra amount that you owe on your car above what it's worth. But you've got to complete a Chapter 13 plan, meaning you've got to make somewhere between 36 and 60 months' worth of payments to a trustee while you make your regular mortgage payments. So this can be a very valuable tool for somebody who's had some financial trouble, gotten behind, and has heavy credit card debt perhaps. We can eliminate that or get rid of a lot of it. But you're paying back something, and it's based on a plan that you submit to the court, and they Chapter 13 trustee and your creditors have a right to comment on and object to if they don't like it. And then the judge has to make a ruling whether you've met the standards for approval of a Chapter 13 plan or not.
So in other words, except for very few people, most people are going to qualify for Chapter 13. Let me ask one other question because this comes up often. I'm asked, can they get rid of any portion of their first mortgage, or is it just going to be able to strip down second mortgages and other debts?
Unfortunately, where fortunately, if you're a banker, you are unable to get rid of your first mortgage or to reduce what you owe on it, except with the lender's consent, with a mortgage modification. Chapter 13 doesn't really contemplate mortgage modifications for first mortgages. In fact, there is embedded in the bankruptcy code in the portions involved with Chapter 13 what's called an anti-modification provision. That expressly protects first mortgages on your principal residence. So you can't really reduce what you owe or get a lower interest rate or extend out the term unless you apply for a mortgage modification with your and go through the HAMP process or the other mortgage loss mitigation processes that banks and the bankruptcy courts and the U.S. Treasury have set up. But it's a voluntary program. The bank doesn't have to do anything for you. But under a number of the federal lawsuits that have been brought and a number of Treasury regulations that come out of the 2008 banking crisis and the big crash, the federal government has encouraged banks to modify a lot of mortgages. So the real question is whether you're going to qualify. We've been hearing, though, that some of these laws are going to sunset after 2016. And so what I suggest to people is if they're having trouble making mortgage payments or they've got a lot of credit card debt and they need to clean that up and get rid of it so that they can keep their home and make their mortgage payments, consideration of a Chapter 13 is a good idea. At least it should be explored. It's not for everybody. There are some folks who we would just not put in a 13, or maybe we need to put them in a 13, but they can't just seem to complete a plan because of a job loss, a divorce, or some other illness, or some other calamity.
Let me ask one other question, then we're pretty much going to play a couple commercials and go to the news. But let me ask, on HAMP, I think there is an upward amount that they can only qualify under the HAMP also, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. The last time I took a look at HAMP, I think you could not owe more than either $729,000 or $750,000.
That was my understanding was $729,000. Well, what happens if it's increased, if the principal was originally $729,000, but because of, you know, non-payments, et cetera, it's much more than that?
I don't know the answer. I think the total you have to owe has to be under $729,000 for HAMP. But remember, HAMP is not the only program out there. Many lenders have their own, I'll call them private label or proprietary programs, where they want to avoid a loss of mortgage interest. They want to not have to take back a house because they don't know that they would get what they're owed on it. So they may very well be willing to consider some kind of mortgage modification. Anybody who's interested in that should contact their lender and ask for what's called the Request for Mortgage Assistance form. It's actually a packet of documents that they need to fill out, send back along with a hardship letter.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bill. Let's play a couple more spots, and we'll go to the news and be back with the sports guys.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.